When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can be confusing. Like Swedish techno confusing.
Bark, bark, meow, meow. Dance with me, purple cow. Bark, bark, meow, meow. Ooh, you lovely cow.
Geico makes it easy. With 24/7 access, all you have to do is go to Geico.com and you could save money on car insurance. It just makes sense. Unlike, you know.
Dance with me, purple cow. I like your moves.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the Get Better Wellness Radio Show. My name is Erin Chamberlick. I'm the Holistic Nutrition Educator coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois. Today is October 4th, and I am talking to you today about diabetes, blood sugar, and the fact that we can reverse diabetes. Now, this might be an unknown fact to many people, but the CDC says that 1 in 3 U.S. adults will be diabetic by the year 2050. And the Center for Disease Control and Prevention also estimates that there will be nearly 140 million people with diabetes in this country within the next 40 years. Also, Bill Falloon from the Life Extension Foundation has done some research and says that more than 75% of people over age 40 suffer some degree of prediabetes. So could that be you? What are some of the signs and symptoms? What are some of the lab results? Let's try and get into that, but I'd like to get your attention on what maybe you don't even realize you're doing to your body by typical things that we eat. And we'd like to know that we can be healthy into a ripe old age, but yet we eat things and do things that are contrary to this. So let's talk about Starbucks. On their website, they say eating well is as important as living well. So everything we offer is made from great, fresh-tasting ingredients. Is that true? Is fresh-tasting ingredients the same thing as fresh ingredients? I don't think so. A pumpkin scone will deliver to your bloodstream 78 grams of carbohydrates. You know, can you feel good about that half a cup of sugar? And if you're washing it down with a 16-ounce double chocolatey chip frappuccino, that's another 25 teaspoons of sugar. So you're walking out of Starbucks with a cup of sugar coursing through your veins. So now that I've woken you up and you feel guilty about going to Starbucks, I want to tell you that we have a guest this morning, and his name is Dr. Eric Westman. He is a physician out of Duke University. And let me see if I can get Dr. Westman on the line. Dr. Westman, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes, can you
hear
me okay?
I can. Good morning. Well, let me just finish my introduction. And you and I both attended the University of Wisconsin. However, I was at Whitewater, and I believe you were at Madison.
Yes,
you did your residency at the University of Kentucky Medical Center, fellowship in general internal medicine at Duke, and you are the medical director of the Duke University or Duke Center for Nicotine and Smoking Cessation Research. But we're talking this morning about crazy, out-of-control diabetes in this country. And the train is running off the tracks, and I believe if we wait for standard medical community to give us the right advice, we're going to have a boatload of sick people. And I know that you and other physicians are on the right track. And so I just want to talk with you this morning about what you're doing, what you're finding. Is there, you know, the research to back the diet recommendations that you make? So
sure.
Can we just start? What, you know, tell me about your day-to-day practice at Duke. What kinds of people are you seeing, and what's going on over there?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. As a researcher, I was interested in lifestyle treatments for diseases that we have today. And I guess that made me unusual because most of my doctor researchers are interested in medications, and the research is really involving medicine. I think that's what explains your frustration with the general medical community in fixing this problem, because we all in the medical world think that drugs will fix it. And I got, like you, disillusioned with that idea because what I was doing as an internist wasn't really working to fix things. It was palliating things, making things, you know, just go on a little longer with diabetes and high blood pressure, all these problems. One of my patients, when I was a young doctor, did this diet that we thought was crazy at the time. It was this crazy thing called the Atkins diet. You know, this was in the mid-90s. And I didn't know anything about it. I was not really trained in nutrition, and I was sort of drubbed into reading the book, and I thought, well, this can't be good for you. You're eating all this fat, and your cholesterol will go up. And one of my patients said, well, why don't you measure my cholesterol? You know, you're a doctor. You have, you know, you're my doctor. So I did, and the cholesterol got better, you know, two in a row, people doing this kind of diet, and I was quite curious. So I tracked down Dr. Atkins in New York City and said, you need to do some research, and he said, okay. And now, you know, this is, what, 10, 12, 15 years later, all the research says that the Atkins diet or a low-carb diet or you know, cutting carbs out of the diet is good for you. Not bad for you. And unfortunately, the message getting out is really slow. And there are a lot of doctors who are in the same situation I was in the mid-90s, you know, 15 years ago. The initial gut reaction is this can't be good and all this fat and all this. And actually, it is good. So the science is really solid now. And I wanted to let you know, this spring there was a big consensus panel that wrote a paper. Arne Astrup was the first author out of Copenhagen, and he has a blog at the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, where he basically says we're re-examining saturated fats. And we don't think that it has the same effect that we thought it used to. And I think that's the main reason why doctors think this might be a bad thing, is we've been conditioned to think that fat in the foods is bad for you, when really it looks like it's the sugar, like you were saying before. And, you know, an astounding fact, which most doctors don't know, is that we have 1 teaspoon of sugar in the entire bloodstream of a normal person. So if you make that teaspoon of sugar go up to 2 teaspoons in the bloodstream, you're a diabetic. We call you a diabetic. So if your body, your insulin in the blood doesn't control the sugar down to that 1 teaspoon level throughout the whole bloodstream, then you're a diabetic. I mean, that, and now you imagine you're drinking 5 to 10 teaspoons in a drink. You know, you're just overwhelming your body's systems, and that's, I think, the main reason why we have the diabetes and obesity epidemic, because that sugar is turned into fat really well. So that's my brief story of how, as a researcher but as an internist first, I gravitate toward prevention and treating diabetes and obesity. And now in my clinic, this is really all I do. I put people on low-carb diets. You know, last year, the New Atkins for a New You book came out. I was honored to be one of the co-authors on that book. It's a national bestseller, The New Atkins for a New You. And many people now come to me having read that book and already fixing their problems. So like you're having, the effect on people can be quite fast and more powerful than medications, because the low-carb diet not only fixes the diabetes, it fixes the obesity, which was the original cause for the diabetes in the first place. This is type 2 adult-onset diabetes that I'm referring to. So it's pretty amazing, and I'd like your experience using this, because it's not me. I mean, there's a lot of people that says, oh, Dr. Westman, you're so great. No, it's the method, you know. Dr. Atkins really is the star and the celebrity. We're just kind of channeling his idea and his practice into this new sort of practice. And I'm doing that at Duke.
Yeah, it is. It's so simple, or it could be so simple, that, you know, I teach a class that meets four times for an hour and a half, and I say, if you get nothing else out of this, you know, the message is eat real food. If you can imagine it growing, right, you know, then it's more likely to be okay. But if it's coming off the end of a factory line, it's more likely to be damaging your health. So,
yes,
you know, we're really just wanting people to get back to the way we ate, you know, over 100 years ago. Our grandmas,
well, or
maybe our great-grandmas.
Or in Europe today. If we had the good fortune to go to Geneva, Switzerland last summer as a part of the Atkins team, and we gave a talk at a World Health sort of conference. And in France, for example, in Paris, we had a few days there. This is the way they eat. Things are grown locally. They're not afraid of fats in the foods. We had some just delicious meals with tons of fat. The flavors are so great. So it's not only, in the U.S., the agribusiness got involved, and the governmental recommendations and these other non-governmental organizations started promoting the drugs and the foods America makes, and that's really what messed us all up. And it's really an American thing. I had a doctor from Sweden visit my clinic, Andreas Ehrenfeld, and he's watching this low-carb revolution happen in Sweden. And he watched my patients and seeing what they were eating, and he said, "This is amazing. We don't have the sweet tooth in Sweden, you know. So we've created a sweet tooth monster, if you will." I mean, I remember growing up with Halloween candy, with this, you know, mound of candy, and eating till I was, you know, just so full and all that sugar. And so it's an American issue, and you know, unfortunately, it's spreading now to other countries as well. But yes, we can learn from just by looking at what our grandma or parents did. I have a lot of people in North Carolina who grew up on farms in rural area and in Wisconsin as well. And this is the way they used to eat. You'd have bacon in the morning and save the grease and use it for the vegetables later on. And you know, everything tastes better with bacon. I'm sorry, you know. So this is a wonderful way to eat as well. So you're not feeling deprived. Have you noticed the hunger just going away as well? I mean, that's pretty reliable.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, not only myself, but, you know, I was a big carb girl, cereal for breakfast with English muffin and jelly and, you know, Big Mac for lunch. But, it was always this constant hitting the candy machine at work, whatever. And once I switched to, you know, I do, like this morning, had a couple of eggs, some organic sausage and some asparagus. And that I won't think about, you know, the next meal for a couple of hours, which is not what people feel when they're eating, you know, bagels for breakfast. They're looking for the next thing for 2 hours. Can you explain why that is? What's happening in them, in their bodies when they eat bagel and cereal for breakfast?
Yeah, well, I think it has to do with the blood sugar going up and down, the fluctuation of blood sugar and the insulin and probably lots of hormones we don't yet understand. You know, the science behind this is more experiential, hearing what people say, than biochemical, you know. David Kessler, the former FDA commissioner, wrote a book that came out last year saying basically the industry had created foods that people can't resist. You know, that's the other phenomenon of it's good business to make foods that people love and even have a mild addictive quality to them. So it's complicated. That what's really neat is the normalization of all that when you take carbs out of the equation. So I think in terms, and in my class, I teach people for an hour personally, and then they come back a week later on the program, and I check them in, and then I see people in my clinic every 2 to 4 weeks, depending on their medical issues. Like for diabetes, I take them off the medicine very quickly and have to monitor them closely. And I guess that's the only warning I say with people who have medical problems. If you're taking diabetes medicine, please do this with a doctor who understands how fast the diabetes can get better. So, you know, I have to take people off medication pretty quickly sometimes. The normalization of the appetite just going away when you take carbs out of the equation, it's because we become fat-burning machines. You know, we can burn what we eat in the carbs or the fat, and when you take carbs out, our bodies become fat burners. and even we're handling the fat differently now that's in the food, right? So that's why when you eat this way, there's no hunger. It's because you're burning your own fat. That is, if you have extra fat to burn that you're carrying around. And fortunately, most Americans have extra battery packs of energy that they're carrying around. It's just a lot of our patients can't get access to that. So if you're eating carbs, your body doesn't know that you're carrying around all that fat. So the normalization of that, and in experiential terms, is just, this has been around since the mid-1800s, the concept of this diet. In fact, for diabetes, I found some textbooks in the early 1900s, 1920 or so, where this was the treatment of choice for diabetes, just taking
because
the
carbohydrate
diet.
Because there were no drugs.
There were no drugs, that's right. Insulin was discovered in about 1921. So really, the medical world today is trying to find the drug cure, and they haven't found it yet. And I mean, I hope we do find it. I mean, I'm not a Dr. Basher. I just want to teach doctors this other method because it's so powerful, and it doesn't use medication, but it works as well as medications.
It does. And do you find that you can always reverse diabetes, or does it depend how long the person has had the diagnosis, the condition?
Well, in our research study that we did on diabetes specifically that we published it's 2008 now, Nutrition and Metabolism was the journal, the people that we had were severe enough with the diabetes that most of them still had weight to lose after the 6 months. And so the weight is, you have to think in terms of the extra weight as being the cause of the diabetes. So you may not fix the diabetes until all of the extra weight is gone. Now, lowering the carbohydrates may initially give you a reduction in the blood sugar, and if the diabetes is very mild, you will fix the blood sugar abnormality right away. But in some people, it takes a long time to lose the extra weight to fix the diabetes. So we opened this clinic about 5 years ago, and I have fixed diabetes in maybe a dozen people because they've reached their goal. But I have a lot of people who, in terms of weight loss, but a lot of people who are still diabetic because they still have more weight to lose. And in my clinic, I see about a 50 to 100-pound weight loss per year, and that for I have some people who have 200-300 pounds extra to lose. And if that's the cause of the diabetes, that may take more time. But yes, you can fix the diabetes, absolutely.
Now, talk to me about what do you say are the ideal levels for glucose? I know it would be different from what the lab test might say on somebody's report. So what should they be looking at?
Yeah, well, so blood glucose, kind of like blood pressure, as the years go by, in my experience, the recommendations keep getting lower and lower. And the normal range for blood sugar for me is in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's blood sugar should be in the 80s, and that's all day. You know, if you eat foods that don't raise the blood sugar, there's no rise in the blood sugar after a meal. And we teach in medical school, and dietitians are taught that there's this normal rise of the blood sugar after a meal. Well, normal, that's only if you're eating carbohydrates. Eating mostly protein and fat, there's no rise in the blood sugar after a meal. And so most of these blood tests say, 100 is normal. I'm not satisfied with that. I want it to be even lower. And that means the hemoglobin A1C, this is the 3-month reflection of the blood sugar, while most doctors are happy when it's under 7, I want it under 6. And I want it under 6 off medications. See, medications, that's kind of cheating, I want to do it healthy in a way without medications at all. So my perspective is a little stricter than a lot of most doctors and the mainstream consensus. Because I think they don't know how to fix it to that level. So they've created the guidelines to be a little bit lax and not the healthiest that it could be.
Now,
does that make sense?
It does. Are you Well, if you had a patient who came in with blood sugar in the 80s and you knew they ate a lot of carbs and sugar, candy, ice cream, how do you look at them? I know you don't look at them as, well, you're fine because you're in the 80s. What could be going on that fasting glucose doesn't tell the whole story?
Oh, right. So the fasting blood glucose can be normal because your body is secreting insulin as a result of the blood sugar, and the insulin is keeping the blood sugar normal. And if we're not measuring the insulin, you may not know how high it truly is in order to keep your blood sugar normal, the fasting one. And then the blood sugar after a meal, the postprandial blood sugar, is not measured in that fasting blood sugar. So if just measuring the fasting blood sugar can miss a whole host of blood sugar abnormalities that we think are really important. The research is focusing on what happens in the blood after meals, and the research says that that blood sugar going up after a meal really high is not a good thing. And that's one of the criteria for diabetes, is the rise in the blood sugar after the meal. But I go a step further and say that if your insulin is really high, keeping that blood sugar normal, that's not good either. And mm-hmm. if you have extra weight, so a lot of us have the genetic benefit of, in a famine, we would live because we have this mm-hmm. extra weight and extra fat. But now if we have a lot of insulin around and we're still eating carbs, we turn that carb into fat and store it very well. And a lot mm-hmm. of the... So if you're obese or overweight and have a blood sugar of 80, your insulin is probably very high, and you've made all of that extra blood sugar very efficiently back into the fat. And that's one of the puzzles we don't know, is why some people have that normal blood sugar and they're obese, and why people get diabetes and they're obese. That's still not quite clear. I'm sorry.
What would be an insulin level that would be normal or ideal?
Sure.
And do you measure it fasting and then 2 hours, or what do you do?
Well, if you look at the normal, meaning what we see normally, you know, and you have to keep that in mind, because all of the normal ranges are developed by Americans living in the last, you know, couple decades, which means that mostly are eating carbohydrates, and the insulin level, that the normal range or optimal one, is between 5 and 10 in the units that are used, so under 10. And after a meal, if you eat carbohydrates, that insulin can go up to 30 or 40 or 50. And I've seen some people whose insulin levels are stuck at 50 to 100 all day long.
Ooh.
Because of the diabetes and the insulin resistance that comes with the extra adipose or obesity and the eating of the carbohydrates. So this probably is a reflection of the leptin problem, which the science has unveiled just over the last decade or so. Unfortunately, we don't have treatments based on the leptin yet, but mm-hmm. Insulin tells us a lot. And so if you get your blood sugar and insulin measured, some doctors will do this after a meal. They'll give you a set amount of glucose or a meal that has carbohydrates, and monitor the blood sugar and the insulin over time. This is called a glucose tolerance test. And then you'll get the blood sugar reading and the insulin reading. And we see a lot of people whose insulin levels just go way up in order to keep the blood sugar normal. And the unintended consequence of that insulin going up is that it tells the liver to make fat out of any extra sugar and to store that away in the fat tissue. And that's really the underlying cause for most of the obesity in America today, is that we've been eating too many carbs and the insulin has gone up and we've stored all the extra fat and carb as fat in our body.
Right, exactly. Now, and everybody in this country wants to believe that fat makes you fat, but it is carbohydrates that make you fat. And the biochemistry doesn't explain it any other way. So why do you suppose the message, the dogma of, you know, saturated fat is bad, why does that keep going around and around?
Well, so it's complicated. I remember meeting one of the doctors who was involved in creating the message that fat was bad. And in terms of obesity, they just took the general principle that fat has 9 calories per gram and carbohydrate has 4 calories per gram. So it's logical, if we want to reduce calories, we would reduce fat. Well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that if you increase your carb eating by 3 grams for every gram of fat you reduced, you're actually eating more calories than you reduced by reducing the fat. So basically, what happened is that people just ate more carbs than the fat they reduced. And thus the industry created all of these higher carb foods that people ate more in terms of the grams, and so they ate more calories. So that was unfortunate, because today, I mean, in the medical world, my standard is that you have to study something before you talk about it. You have to actually, do some sort of prospective study, best yet even a randomized controlled trial, before you can talk about it. And in the nutrition world, there's no standard for that,
Okay.
And for the saturated fat idea, there's a great movie out now that called Fathead by Tom Naughton, and it's a very entertaining view at a lot of the obesity problem, and there's some great clips in there that are available online at the Fathead movie website. I show them in my clinic. They're very snappy, and the science that started out saying that saturated fat was basically not very solid science. And so we know today that science just didn't hold up to today's standards. And, back then that you would take that information and make those conclusions, but now it really doesn't hold the muster. And Ansel Keys was one of the scientists behind it. The complication of it is Ansel Keys is revered at the University of Minnesota as I think he passed away recently, creating this science and all. And there are people who, are taught by him and believed in that message, and that's why it's confusing for the lay people, because different universities have different focuses. And one of his early studies actually dropped out some of the data points, and that was not good to do in the scientific world. So that's why the science never really supported the idea of restricting saturated fat for anything. And Gary Taubes tells this story in his book, Good Calories, Bad Calories, which came out a few years ago. And then the shorter version is called Why We Get Fat. Taubes is Taubes. Those are great reads if you're really puzzled as to how this all came about. And then the Women's Health Initiative study, which was one of the largest nutrition diet studies ever, was testing the low-fat diet, and it did not help women over an 8-year period really for anything. It didn't help reduce breast cancer, which was the primary purpose of it. It didn't help reduce heart disease. It didn't help reduce diabetes. In fact, for those people who had heart disease and diabetes at baseline, it made them worse. And what's really fascinating is you're not hearing that message. The government doesn't want to broadcast one of the largest studies they funded, and it was a negative study. So, a negative study meaning the diet didn't work. So the low-fat diet, which the government, the non-governmental organizations, all these people have been promoting, doesn't work. And the solid science of today says, in fact, it may harm people. And why that message isn't getting out is fascinating, because, basically the industry, it can't really react to that quickly, and the people who the non-governmental organizations are basically funded by the pharmaceutical industry and by the companies that make carbohydrate products. So they're not going to want to rock the boat,
Well, we unfortunately, this is a 30-minute podcast, and it's not enough time to dive into the subject very deeply. But for the person listening who would like to change their diet, can you give us a short synopsis of what do you tell your patients to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And are they counting calories and measuring fat and doing things like that?
Well, you know, first of all, there are lots of ways to be healthy, you know, and that I just want to put that out there is that I embrace lots of different approaches, and including the low-carbohydrate approach. The low-carb approach or the Atkins diet is a relatively simple way to go about controlling the metabolism of the blood sugar and the fat in the body. And so in my clinic here in North Carolina, most of my patients eat bacon and eggs for breakfast. They have for lunch something like a grilled chicken salad, or they can go to McDonald's and have a Big Mac, just not eat the bun, and or diet soda. I have a Duke professor who buys pheasant at the local Whole Foods health store and has that with his wife every night. Another Duke professor drives through fast food every day and just asks for the low-carb bowl at the place called Biscuitville that we have here. Okay. So there are lots of ways to do it.
No grains.
That's right. So the main message is to lower the carbs in the body, to lower the insulin in the blood, and that insulin being low allows your body to access its own fat store if you have extra fat. And the nice thing is the hunger goes away, you're eating delicious foods, and you really don't have to exercise much or at all. And that, again, is, you know, goes against the main message we've been telling people for a long time. But you can accomplish so much by the food.
That is true, and people don't feel like exercising until they do get some of the weight off, and the food
is the answer.
So, yeah. Dr. Westman, thank you for your time this morning. I really appreciate
it. Well, my pleasure. Keep it up.
And if folks are interested in getting more information, I have a website, getbetterwellness.com, and I will put the link to this podcast out there. I know Dr. Westman has a Facebook that he posts recipes on and things once in a while. And if you're in North Carolina, you can certainly find him at his Duke clinic. So thank you. I wish you a good day, and let's just try and get those grains out of our diet, and we'll be much healthier. Okay,
great.
Have a great day.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
When you don't go to geico.com, car insurance can be hard, like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming, and I'm loud. Roar.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not even upset about anything.